It is a threat that's deep and diverse and wide and vexing. And so we're working extremely hard with all of our partners to combat it.
Taking a close look at alleged Chinese espionage. It's Wednesday, July 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. And you can follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China seeks closer ties with the Middle East. Australia grows agricultural ties. The business of Chinese oil and Japanese robots. It's all on today's VOA Asia. FBI has more than 1,000 investigations of U.S. intellectual property theft in all 50 states, with nearly all of those cases leading back to China. That is what FBI Director Christopher Wray said Tuesday, calling China the number one counterintelligence threat to the United States. Wray testified before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee.
So China is fighting a generational fight here. And when I say China, I want to be clear. This is not about the Chinese people as a whole, and it's certainly not about Chinese Americans in this country. What it is about, though, is about a country that is, in a variety of ways, through the Chinese government, the Chinese Communist Party, using not just government officials, but private sector entities, non-traditional collectors, et cetera, to steal their way up the economic ladder at our expense. And we have, as we speak, probably about 1,000 plus investigations all across the country involving attempted theft of U.S. intellectual property, whether it's economic espionage or counterproliferation, almost all leading back to China. And so it is a threat that's deep and diverse and wide and vexing, whether it's in terms of the kinds of actors that are used, the kinds of techniques are used, the kind of targets that are used. And so we're working extremely hard with all of our partners to combat it. But make no mistake, this is a high, high priority for all of us.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Masood Farivar, who covers the Justice Department for VOA and attended the hearing.
So this really isn't, or at least really doesn't seem to be, a normal kind of intelligence operation. They seem to have changed things, did the Chinese, according to what he was having to say.
That's right. That's one point that Director Wray tried to emphasize, that there's a lot of misunderstanding about the way the Chinese go about the spying in this country. It really has moved from traditional spy craft, spy on spy, traditional spying activities, to the use of non-traditional intelligence collectors, whether it's businessmen, graduate students, or scientists, scholars at major universities, researchers embedded with corporations and businesses.
Is there a different way of handling this kind of counterintelligence? Was that addressed at all?
It kind of was. I mean, the fact that China has resorted to the non-traditional means of spycraft has complicated counterintelligence efforts by the U.S. I mean, the line between the private and public sector, as the director pointed out, has become blurred, if not eliminated. So what the FBI has been doing in the past couple of years is to increase its outreach to universities, one of the major targets of Chinese intelligence operations in this country, to warn the heads of universities and research labs about what to look out for, what to be on the lookout for, and what kind of safeguards to put in place. And some members of the committee, especially Republicans, went as far as suggesting that, you know, universities that work with certain foreign students on highly proprietary research projects should probably obtain so-called deemed export licenses. Those are issued to institutions that provide the proprietary U.S. intellectual property to foreign sources.
Masood Farivar covers the Justice Department for The Voice of America. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ira.
And we invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. These are some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. South Korean claims of warning shots to Russian jets disputed by Moscow. Hong Kong arrests men with gang links over mob attack. Former Chinese Premier Li Peng dies at age 90. You can find more on all of these stories with photos and videos at Facebook and VOA Asia and the website voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China is playing host to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed, who is in Beijing on a state visit. Like the UAE, China aspires to increase its role as a maritime trading player, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Arab media played up Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed's state visit to Beijing, where he met with top Chinese leaders and discussed trade and security ties. China was the UAE's second largest trading partner in 2017, with bilateral trade of $60 billion. Sky News Arabia reported that more than 500 businessmen from Chinese and Emirati firms Monday attended a joint economic conference where numerous business deals were discussed and signed. The report noted that the UAE and China began strengthening ties during a state visit by Chinese President Xi Jinping to Abu Dhabi in 2018. Mohammed bin Zayed stressed the importance of stronger ties with Beijing while thanking Chinese leaders for their warm welcome. Bin Zayed says he is grateful for the cordial reception by his Chinese hosts and that Abu Dhabi was proud to host President Xi in July 2018, a visit which he says showed the depth of ties between the two countries. National newspaper based in Abu Dhabi reported that Crown Prince Mohammed and President Xi were due to witness the signing of at least 10 agreements in the fields of economy, oil, and environment. The newspaper added the two would also discuss regional and international issues of common interest. Paul Sullivan is an adjunct professor of security studies at Georgetown University. He tells VOA that China is becoming a more important player in the region every day, while the U.S., he suggests, is losing some of its traditional clout. Sullivan says tensions in the Gulf are of major importance to both the UAE and China. There could be some quiet discussions, he suggests, to create a backdoor to Iran via China to help resolve the tensions. A war, he argues, is an all-will-lose proposition, and both countries' leaders know this. Tensions between Iran and the West have been stoked by Tehran's announcement that it had captured 17 U.S. spies and sentenced some of them to death. Iran alleged they had been collecting information from sensitive sites for the Central Intelligence Agency. U.S. President Donald Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo have rejected the Iranian claims. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Australian researchers are looking to Africa and the Middle East for drought and heat-resistant crops, as many grain farmers face another failed season. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The outlook for the 2019 winter grain harvest in parts of Australia isn't good. The forecast is for key farming regions in southern Queensland to miss their third crop in a row. The national crop this year is expected to be about 10% below the 10-year average. Australia's Grains Research and Development Corporation, the GRDC, is carrying out a global search for climate-proof grains. It believes crops in Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East and Africa could be adapted to help farmers become more resilient and productive in the face of a warming climate and less rainfall. Researchers say that identifying and developing drought and heat-resistant crops takes many years of development. GRDC's Northern Panel Chairman John Minogue says his research agency is searching for crops that can flourish in difficult conditions.
We've got people in Syria, in Africa, in all of the parts of the world which have historically had these crops grown for thousands of years. We have a lot of investments in people on behalf of the grain growers searching the world for plants that are resistant to drought and also that are able to handle stress conditions and heat, and identifying the germplasm that we can then integrate into the Australian crops.
Large areas of eastern Australia have been in drought for periods ranging from 12 months to 7 years. More than 95% of New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, is officially in drought. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, response to an illegal shipment of oil. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's approval rating hit a new high because of his anti-crime work and populist appeal across class lines. While many nations and groups around the world criticize him, Duterte earned a net satisfaction rating of 68 in a July 8th public opinion survey. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a Chinese oil company is sanctioned while robots prepare to greet Olympic visitors. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
The U.S. has sanctioned Chinese oil company Zhuhai Jinrong for transporting Iranian crude oil. The company will be barred from engaging in any banking or property transactions that are under U.S. jurisdiction. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
They violated U.S. law by accepting crude oil. We've said all along that any sanction will indeed be enforced. We can't tolerate more money going to the Ayatollah, putting American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, and putting their life at risk.
In an email to the Reuters news agency, a spokesperson for the Chinese embassy in Washington said, "We urge the U.S. to immediately correct its wrongdoing and earnestly respect other parties' legal rights and interests." Pompeo announced the new sanction measures Monday in a speech to the veterans of foreign wars. Olympic organizers this week unveiled some of the robots visitors might get a chance to meet at the 2020 Olympics and Paralympics in Tokyo. Some, like the mascot robots Mirai Towa and Someti, are just intended for fun and entertainment. But others, developed by Toyota Moto Corporation and Panasonic, have more practical uses, like assisting visitors in wheelchairs or helping staff manage the games. Gon Yamazaki is a child who had a chance to meet some of the robots at their debut.
I was impressed that the robot can do a high five and shake hands.
Tokyo is in fact busy designing an entire robotic village in Tokyo's Odaiba district, where organizers say robots will be helping hundreds of thousands of visitors carry their luggage, translate difficult sentences, or even hail a taxi. Japan has been on the forefront of robotics for years. Earlier this year, it opened the world's first robotic hotel. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has said he wants to make robots a major part of the country's economic growth strategy and boost investment in the technology and robotics industries. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We invite you to find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. There you can download it and take it with you throughout your day if you can't listen to us as we stream our program live, which happens on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You can also hear us on the radio. Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia carries our program. We say hello and thank you to everyone who's listened today. We also say thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.